The Bizarre Cast contains adult themes and explicit content. Listener discretion is advised.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the latest edition of the Bizarre Cast. And joining me today, I have Bridge Burner, known to friends and family as Anthony, but today we will be talking all things Bridge. Bridge, first, who is the Anthony behind the Bridge Burner? Can you give a little background of who you are and what you're all about?
Well, I was born in 1989. I'm assuming you don't really go quite back that far, but I'm
depending how far you want to go back. You know, like what was it like in being a Kiwi and roaming the mountains and all that kind of stuff?
Like I said, I'm a Kiwi. I'm from New Zealand, it's been actually been a pretty nice country to grow up in, to be honest. And I'm in my mid 30s, born in 85, child of the 90s kind of thing. Yeah, no, it's just pretty normal life. Just trying to think if there's anything special or spectacular that happened to me throughout it. But, pretty normal childhood. Big family. I've got four brothers and sisters. And we're very, very noisy. But a nice, just real good, solid childhood and teenager and then into adulthood and whatnot. So I guess a synopsis of, I studied sports and exercise science at Auckland University. Right. Which is a science degree, with kind of like a health focus, but specializing in what happens when you exercise, and you do a lot of field research and studying of how supplements affect people, and a lot of psychology and why do people choke in sports and all that kind of stuff. It was really, really fascinating, but never used it professionally, so money well spent.
But it's always like most degrees, I feel.
Yeah, you're not wrong there. But no, it was a good time. I enjoyed that. And even if you don't use a degree as a job, still teaches you critical thinking and how to form arguments and do research and all that kind of stuff. And then actually went overseas and I made it all the way to your home country, Ireland. Spent almost a year in Europe, bumming around as young adults are wont to do, which was a hell of a time. Definitely want to go back. And then I came back to New Zealand after that. I think I was 24. And didn't quite know what I wanted to do. And dad's a property developer, and he got me a job on a construction site just as a laborer. And then almost 12 years later, I'm a site manager. So that turned into an apprenticeship, and that turned into a career. And that has been an enjoyable job. Generally, it's definitely not boring. Lots of interest, probably a little bit too stressful at times. But
a site manager, I can barely manage my own life. Never mind a site.
No, when things go bad, they go really bad. I've been on some pretty bad jobs, super stressful. But when it's good, it's a lot of fun, and the company I work for is actually a really good one. So they take care of their employees, and that was something that I never really considered. When I grew up, was getting into a trade. My parents really they weren't like anti vocations. It was more like just kind of assumed that we, kids would go to uni because we're a bunch of nerds. Geeks in my family.
Well, you did come back around on that. That's kind of that was going to be the main topic, but I'm more intrigued now that you have a lot of construction stories.
Maybe I could regale you. It's interesting because my mum's dad was a carpenter. I'm not actually sure how technically trained he was, but he was definitely a handyman, and he did work on the family home at times and built up bathroom and stuff like that. So it just never really registered as something to try. Yeah. And I remember when I decided to do an apprenticeship, as an adult. And I remember one of the other foremen was like, "Oh, why are you going to do that? You're smart. Why would you do construction?" It's like, dude, this is really fascinating. It's not. Yeah. If you want to, it's very mentally engaging. There's so many elements. I do large scale commercial stuff, so not building houses. It's multi-story apartment blocks and warehouses and lots of industrial is what our company does. So it's a bit of a different kettle of fish to building a house. But the various trades, like as a main contractor, you have to know a little bit about everything, just enough to know who to ask the questions of or where there's going to be a problem, like on the plans. I don't have to know how to wire a building, but I have to know where the wires go. That PowerPoint's going to be a problem. This is an issue on the design. And it's that jack of all trades kind of thing. So that's been essentially for work the last decade or so.
Oh, nice.
That's good.
Yeah, my wife, she's an accountant with a construction firm, so I get a little bit of insight. It's with quite a big Australian firm. I won't name it on air here, but in case I dox myself. my only foray into construction, I did 2 days with a demolition company in New York, and that was too tough for me. And then I did 10 weeks with a flooring company, and that was some of the best time I ever had.
Nice.
Lots of apartments. Like,
what kind of flooring was it? Carpets or
It wasn't exactly like full timber, but it was like the click in.
Oh, like floors. Parquet flooring.
And
groove kind of stuff.
Yeah, we just did all the skirting boards and tearing up floors and putting down floors. It was very fun. As you know yourself, the banter on the work sites gets a bit out of hand sometimes.
Oh, definitely. Definitely. It's interesting that, similar experience, like when I got involved in construction just as a laborer, literally cleaning up and sweeping floors. But then I guess the vibe was pretty fun. And I figured if I can enjoy, moving doors upstairs, picking up a hammer and actually getting into proper building, and something to try. And it's a good decision, to be honest.
Yeah, it sounds like you're nearly the antipodal version of me, because I did actually run a gym for a while, so I have that exercise background as well. But I did put it into practice, but I'm down in Australia now, so as you can tell, it didn't exactly work out. But we're here, so maybe you're better off not getting into it and focusing on something else.
Well, it's funny you say that, because and we can keep talking about construction if you want, but
yeah, sure.
The next step for me is moving away from that and into games design and a game studio. And that's actually my mum's idea. Was I was like, it's going to be a tough step to make from good salary, taken care of by a big company, to running your own business and having to support yourself through that and budgeting and
absolutely
that kind of stuff. It's a bit tricky. Mum's like, why don't you pick up personal training on the side and something like 10 hours a week, handful of clients. The hourly rates you can charge in that industry are pretty high. And something flexible. I was like, that's not a bad idea. That I finally put that degree to professional use.
Yeah, exactly. You might as well get some money back for that. No, that's good. Well, we are here today not to talk about construction. That was a very nice preamble that we had there. So in the persona of Bridgeburner then, when did this come about? Was this always something you're interested in terms of map making, for those who don't know, specifically in the Doom engine and the Doom verse, I suppose? For those who are listening who are like, what the fuck is Doom, and you've been living under a rock for the last 30 years,
that would have to be a big rock.
Yeah, but there is some people, certainly.
That's true.
So it's a massively influential video game that came out in 1993, released by id Software with a really small group of guys, and it just exploded and turned into a massive multi-genre, sub-genre, very influential game. I think I'm not really doing it justice in a couple of lines here, but I found myself entrenched the last couple of months deep with undercover in the community and trying to pilfer myself some guests. So we have one here today. So, Bridge, what's your history with the Doom franchise, I suppose, would be a better place to start.
It's interesting because it hasn't been a game that didn't define my childhood. It's quite funny. I've told the story a few times. That my parents, like I said, family nerds. My parents do play computer games as well. And, mum and dad always big fans of games like Civilization, 4X games, Command & Conquer, Dune 2. Dune 2 was, I played that a lot as a kid, classic RTS that started that genre. And it's funny because when mum bought dad, I think it was this Christmas, bought dad Dune 2 as a Christmas present, she wasn't quite sure what she was getting. She actually accidentally bought Doom.
Okay, yeah.
Doom, Dune, one of the two.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, this is what I'm talking about, people living under a rock.
Yeah. And she came back with that, and dad opens it up, was like, what's this? But it was interesting because the whole family then played Doom for a bit. Like, even mum and dad gave it a shot, and it wasn't their thing. And then mum went out and corrected the mistake and got Dune 2. And I definitely played Dune 2 more than Doom. So definitely played it a fair amount. And it was the shareware version, just the first episode that we had. And I remember being terrified of E1M4 in particular as a kid, but really enjoying it. But then it was like, play it and then move on to play other games. And then It wasn't until I was in high school, a mate of mine, he was very into Doom, particularly Doom 2. And so he kind of reintroduced me to it. And we started playing it, and you know, did a little LAN sessions at his home. And I was like, man, this is pretty fun. And then we discovered that there was editing software to make your own maps. And the program that we happened across was a shareware one called Deep Sea, back when shareware was still a thing.
Yep.
And we were just kind of like, this is pretty fun. Started mucking around with that, creating our own kind of stuff. And actually, there's some like coded limits in the shareware version. Like you only make 800 lines is the max you can draw.
Right.
You had to pay for the full version. $15. So not much, you know, certainly something that a couple of teenagers could rustle up without too much trouble.
Yeah,
if nothing happens, well, we wasted $15, whatever.
It's a weekend of beer scam. Money down the drain.
Oh, exactly. It's a trip to the France, you know, to Collins or whatever. And we did it, not expecting much, and like a month later, sure enough, in the mail on a fucking floppy disk comes the full version EXE file, and you just copied it over and it, you know, remove those limits. Like, oh, cool. So I mucked around with that for, probably a couple of years. Got pretty serious into it and kind of got that bug about going to make a 32-level megawatt, like Doom 2, and as people do, but never shared anything. It was all very much an insular process, just having fun, you know, with your mates kind of thing, and I don't think really crossed my mind.
So what was the time frame on that? Was it like the year?
Yeah, so this would have been like 15 and for maybe 2 years max.
Okay.
Getting into that. And then I think Diablo happened. That was me for like the next day.
No. Yeah.
ARPGs are probably my favorite genre of game. So I got pulled into that. And Diablo 2, I played that for years. Love those games. And then there was a couple of revisiting of the mapping process.
Yeah.
Yeah, I must have been, early 20s, so probably about the same time I got into construction. There was somewhere around there. There's another couple of year stint getting into stuff, and that was there was some new software, Doom Builder, existed, which is a much, much better program. It's like, well, this is pretty fun again. Get back into that. And probably a little bit more intense to finally share some stuff, but even then, it never really happened.
Why do you think you had the hesitancy to share? Was it just you felt like people would just rail on you, or was it like the insecurity of hazing? Or
it just wasn't something I thought about, to be honest. It's just like, this is fun. I'd like people to play it, but it wasn't the purpose. It was, you know, same much like playing any computer game, it was just an enjoyable thing to do, way to pass time, and I had fun, and that whole process just clicked with me. And I think with that second stint, there was more intense to finally finish something and share it with some people, but it wasn't a major driving factor. It's interesting though. So Doom Builder 2 was the premier editor at the time, and while it was a completely free program, it wasn't shareware, and then had to pay for anything. It still had coded limits,
right?
And I actually hit on one map, and I remember very vividly I hit a limit. Map wasn't finished, and it was maybe I was just tired of it as well. Maybe I'd kind of burnt out on energy, but hitting that was like, okay, that's enough mapping. I can't be bothered rebuilding and cutting ideas, and I'm just going to go. I think Python Exile might have popped out around that point. Or maybe it's Diablo 3. There's another game. I was like, I'm going to go play that now, and I just didn't go back to it.
I certainly had that feeling with, like, very similar. I think I was like playing something like Deus Ex Human Revolution. I just finished the game, and I was like, I'll go back now and do the no kills, no alarms, no detection achievement on hard mode or something.
Yeah.
And I just got like 3-4 hours in, I think I died or something, and I still haven't played the game like 12 years later.
It's
done. And it's like, it's very defeatist when that kind of happens, like, and just goes into the back burner. But how did you get back on the saddle again?
Yeah, that would be, yeah, like I said, that would have been mid-20s kind of thing. And then I got deep into construction, and that's a very engaging job, and into that kind of domestic cycle of the usual kind of life things. And I actually can't remember why I had the idea. Something must have triggered it. There must have been some sort of catalyst where I was like, oh yeah, I made Doom maps, didn't I? That last one I was making, so the one that I was making that I hit the limit on and stopped, I went back and looked, and was like, fuck, this still looks pretty good.
Yeah.
I'm still to this day really, really proud of what I made there, and I'll be remaking it. And it was interesting because that was actually, that one I built, based the layout on a building that I built as an apprentice. Okay.
Right.
It's actually an amenities block for a retirement village.
Okay.
And beautiful building, like really interesting. I had like a library and like this big frog's mouth opening at the front for a huge restaurant, and you know, like rooms down below, workshops for service staff and all that kind of stuff. It was really cool building, cool layout. I was like, this is really fun basing it on a real world kind of structure. So I kind of had, maybe there's some kind of construction thing that triggered the memory. I was like, oh, let's go back and have a look at this. I thought, I wonder what other people do think about this. And for the first time, while I had known about it, I'd never joined Doomworld. So but for the first time, I created an account, shared a couple of screenshots. And it's like, you know, a little bit of positive response. Like, maybe people do like this. Maybe I should try this again. So this was three and a half years ago. I think the account date was early March. 2018, whatever 3 years ago is.
It's pandemic wavy time at the moment. We don't know.
The past. Yeah. So I just started dabbling again. And I think I looked at some of my old stuff. I was like, it's easy just to start from a fresh slate and recreate an idea that I'd had from a previous old map. So I just almost rebuilt it from the ground up, and I just kind of got stuck into that. And so that was the first time I'd actually interacted with the wider Doom community. So I created a thread about this project, and Age of Hell was actually a name that I'd come up with, you know, I think the time before that. It was always going to be called that. And it's like, oh, we'll resurrect this and we'll start, you know, putting together a plan to release the maps.
And at some stage. Don't worry.
We'll talk about more of that later. And yeah, it's like, so I started a Doomworld thread and got, you know, people started following along and you know, like I said, some pretty, you know, generally positive feedback from the screenshots. And I think it was definitely finally getting involved and meeting some cool people, to be honest, was what's kept me going. And yeah, so that's been my primary hobby, yeah, for the last 3 years. I count like thousands, literally thousands of hours sunk into making Doom maps. Just kind of silly when you say it.
I know, but like when I come on in the morning, it's like that little purple icon on Discord. I'm like, oh, Bridge is at it again. He's at the maps. And I popped in anonymously a few times, and I did chat once or twice as well. And it's always like, I'm just looking at the screen. I'm seeing it. It's as if you're looking into the Matrix. I'm like, how in the age of hell does he does he know what the fuck he's doing? Or because my real only experience with like map making was they had a fairly crude one in Far Cry Instincts Predator on the Xbox, and I just remember it was like they had the big grid. I don't know, it could have been like, you know, a kilometer grid or something, and you could do the terrain up and down. And I was like, oh yeah, cool, like we'll make a kind of a maze. So I was playing with my buddy, and then you like dump yourself in to the game, and it's like the biggest chasm you've ever seen, just like New Zealand, the mountains and the caverns. And I'm like,
oh,
I can't get the scaling right here. Like,
yeah, it's a bit off on that. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, to what you said, like because it was so stupid because you could pop in like in real time to test the map, but we had like spent 2 hours like making the map and then popped in. I was like, never again. Went back to it. yeah, and then obviously a little bit of Minecraft is different, but I haven't played that in years either.
I have deliberately avoided that because that seems like the kind of thing that would really appeal to me. I can see that being a time sink. I'm like, no, I'm gonna not touch Minecraft.
I think it is the case if you are creative, because yes, there is a story mode in Minecraft, but it's not really a story mode. It's just they give you something to do for people who want something to do.
Yeah.
But it's ultimately just a playground.
It's a big sandbox. You can do what you want and build some of the stuff people build is absolutely insane.
Yeah, I've got lost in it, and you do stupid projects, and then you get to the end and it's like, oh, I've done that project now. Like, what, my most ambitious project was, because it had to be 99 by 99 base. And then to make glass, you have to mine sand and put it in a furnace, and then you need coal to do the furnace, and to get coal you have to burn wood, you know, it's all like the process. So it was a 99 by 99 glass pyramid out in the middle of the sea. And I think I started from the top and I worked my way down, and I'd say that last five or four layers I was like, oh, this is just getting exponentially more glass I need. I was like, fuck this. Yep.
It's probably like the last, like the bottom three layers is as much as the top.
Yeah, exactly.
50 so, kind of thing.
Yeah, so I was like, oh, God. So I don't think I have much patience. So what is your sort of driving force when making maps? Is it just, because I don't think I'm very creative, but obviously you are, because you have a few accolades to your name because of your maps as well. If you want to expand on that.
Yeah, so it's interesting because this is a conversation that comes up a lot, but just general creative communities, but particularly around about Doom mapping is you know, motivation and sources of creativity and all that kind of stuff. And while I wouldn't advocate and say it's a good way to do it, is the way I did, where I did like you know several stints, just you know essentially behind closed doors and not sharing things. That meant I built up an enjoyment of just the act, you know, the pure act of designing levels, without any kind of extrinsic assistance or additional motivation per se. Of course, I burnt out and stopped. So there's a, you know, it's double-edged sword kind of thing. But it did instill in me, like, this is just fun kind of attitude. And that is still a big part of why I put so much time into it. It's like, I just genuinely enjoy it. But as you said, you alluded to, I've actually won a few awards now for my work, and I will be lying if I didn't say that, you know, that doesn't also motivate me, is, you know, people saying, this is some cool shit, you should make more of it.
I won't give you the cruelty of telling you your own awards. I'll name out the awards here. So in the CAC Awards in 2020, you received Creator of the Year title. And then in 2019, at the same award ceremony, you got a runner-up, selected for runner-up. Is that, do I have that correct?
Kind of, sort of. 2019 was a runner-up award for my first solo release called The Slaughter Spectrum.
Oh, sure.
And I got a Newcomer of the Year, which is, they give to like a handful. It sounds cooler than it probably is. But essentially, you know, it's who's this guy? Kind of thing. So that kind of put me on a few radars. And then the following year, that was Creator of the Year. So that was the award ceremony 2020 for a map called Bastion of Chaos, which also won an individual award, as well as an award for the music. And then a community project I ran also won a runner-up award that year as well. So yeah, my imaginary cabinet has a few trophies in it.
Yeah, no, did they post out anything, like the floppy disks?
They did make one physical CAC award for Romero a while back, and I think that's still the only one. But with 3D printing, I'm surprised that someone hasn't actually tried to yet.
I know, maybe we'll get a scan of that. We can mass produce them.
It'd be pretty easy to do, to be honest.
Yeah, no, that's great. And after getting those awards in, and obviously one that was last year, has that motivated you to keep going? Or do you feel like, oh shit, there's a spotlight on me now. The next project needs to be better than the last? Or how do you approach each project? I'm sort of alluding to, I'm going to get onto Hellforge Studios now and the next projects you have, but just on that base question, how do you choose your next project after, I suppose, getting some notoriety?
Yeah, when I you know, released The Slaughter Spectrum, that was my first kind of public release, solo map set. I'd done a community project map a couple months before that as part of something called The Joy of Mapping, which is a community-driven, first-time mapper kind of thing, run by the legendary Jimmy. So technically, I'd released something beforehand, but this is my first kind of offering. This is what I made, kind of thing for me. And at that time, I was very much like a kid in a candy store, just kind of looking at all these other cool projects. And I got invited to a couple to join mapping teams, and that was a pretty big motivating factor. It's like, other people like what I make enough to kind of headhunt me to come and join them. And so that kind of happened for, I'd say, maybe a year and a half, that kind of thought process of just making stuff and having fun and, yeah, joining other community projects and just getting a body of work going. And, like, so Age of Hell was being worked on at the time. And at that point, it was just a Doom mod, you know, map set with some additional custom content, but still based on the actual Doom game. And then through like this kind of community driven stuff, yeah, I met some people and started recruiting a team for Age of Hell, which was an unusual concept for me. But yeah, it's like, people can come help. That'd be cool. I like working with other people because, you know, being picked up for other projects. So, well, let's do the same thing. And that's slowly, over the last couple of years, become a bigger and bigger focus. And I have actually had to make a decision to not go make maps for other people or join community projects. So I've gone from this wide kind of spectrum of like, yeah, let's do all the stuff. And I definitely said yes to too much. I think I was in 11 different projects at one point, which was never going to work. So I cut some that I hadn't started any work for, and some just kind of naturally drifted away from, and pared that back a bit, and kept the ones that I was really excited about. But Age of Hell just slowly took a bigger and bigger chunk of my headspace, I guess, to the point where it's a standalone game. There's like almost 30 different people working on it. Most of those are guest mappers who just contribute a map or two. But that is now the primary focus, and it's like I don't pick up any extra kind of Doom work unless it's something really short, like a speed mapping kind of thing. Or something really, really, really cool. There's a couple of things that if I got asked, I'd be like, yeah, I'm quite tempted to come and help with that. But it's very much a singular focus now.
Yeah, so are ye all now under the banner of Hellforge Studios? Is that sort of where ye guys are at with Age of Hell?
So part of that journey of Age of Hell becoming a more primary focus and going from a Doom mod to a standalone, it was just going to be like a standalone Doom mod. So I did not need Doom 2 to run, to being marketed as an actual game now, although it will still always be free. And part of that driving that was a desire now to be a professional game developer. Because like I said, I enjoy it immensely. And I like working with people. I've met some very, very cool, talented people that I'd like to bring with me on that journey. Yeah, so Hellforge Studios. Had an idea, must have been about 6 months ago. And it's something I was just kind of mulling over for a bit. And the idea, so I've got a pretty decent sized online community, primarily based on Discord. And I was thinking, what would be something cool that I could do for people? And I thought, I could host projects and give them, promotion on Twitter and on Twitch, and a bit of a hub for people to come and check out some cool stuff.
Yeah.
And I canvassed the idea with a few people, and like, yeah, this is a great idea. I was like, cool, let's go talk to some people. So a mix of some existing, quite reputable Doom projects like Sunder, to some new stuff that hasn't been released yet, like Elementalism and Death in the Abyss Dancing in the Abyss, I always get that wrong. Picked up like 7 or 8, kind of pretty cool projects of a variety of styles, like from old school vanilla kind of stuff to, modern, fancy GZ Doom projects. And yeah, that was fun. And I was like, this is pretty cool. And in the back of my head, and I was like, okay, if this works, so this is a kind of testing ground, can I do this for actual games? And the original plan was that shift happened further down the track. We're talking some time in the future, a year or two or three from now. Just an idea. It's like, this could be cool. I want to focus on making my own game. But I think one of the Doom projects that I brought in under that original idea was a standalone game. It's called Relentless Frontier. And there's another podcaster you might have heard of called The Motherload, who does In the Keep.
Yes, subscribed.
Yeah, very, very cool. Very cool podcast. Very cool person as well, and he's very passionate about games and game development. And there's a
soft plug to Building Bridges with Bridge Burner there.
Yeah, and there's my podcast, which is produced by In the Keep. So it's all very incestuous. So I've been on his podcast as Bridge Burner. On the back of Bastion of Chaos, winning those awards, and so I built up a connection with him. He's a really good dude. And there's an event last year called Realms Deep, which is a pretty much an indie retro shooter extravaganza. So kind of like E3, but much more down to earth, and I think a better show. Run by 3D Realms. And that year they had like Dusk and a Medieval and Proteus and Wrath and like pretty heavy hitters. And I was like, okay, this is some cool stuff.
I'll just interject for the people going, what the hell is Realms Deep and 3D Realms? 3D Realms was another very influential company in the 90s that came out with such gems as Duke Nukem 3D and other titles that aren't coming to me right now. But
yeah, there was a like Shadow Warrior, Blood, Riddick Rampage, I think.
Yes. Yeah. So guys listening, they kind of got dissolved, but they've resurrected themselves as bastions of the indie scene, which is fantastic to see, actually, and they're giving back into the community.
Oh, it's huge. And like, yeah, 3D Realms was dead and buried, like big in the 90s, and then just they like Duke Nukem Forever was an absolute catastrophe development wise and the company was for all intents and purposes a relic and didn't seem to be doing anything. And then a guy called Frederick Schreiber, I think his name is, purchased it in 2013, I want to say, and completely turned it around, both making, you know, new content like Iron Fury, but also, like you say, getting heavily involved in the indie dev scene and being, you know, a real port for people to come and you know, network and socialize and help promote each other's work. And yeah, Realms Deep was the first iteration was last year, and yeah, so that showcase happened and it had, like I said, some pretty big games in terms of retro FPSs. It's not AAA titles, but stuff people had heard of and were released and were very, very good. This year, they've gone much, much deeper into the barrel in terms of pulling in just everyone they can find, indie developers of retro style kind of FPS and some other genres. Like there's an RPG in there. There's a couple of kind of Metroidvanias as well, I think.
You're inadvertently saying that you're at the bottom of that barrel there.
I mean, in terms of popularity,
you're at the top, the top of that barrel as they're reaching down for other projects.
Well, you're kind of right, because Motherload, so this is the roundabout story. Motherload, so Hellforge Studios had started with this kind of collection of Doom projects, and Motherload sent me a message, you know, maybe 6 months ago or so. How many of these Doom mods can be standalone games? I was like, I'll go find out. Well, Age of Hell, and then, yeah, this other one, Relentless Frontier. I think at that point we had already, Age of Hell was going to be at Realms Deep, so he'd already pulled me into that. So that was already cool. And he asked me this question. I was like, okay. Oh, I've got a couple. I had a couple other titles on, like, other Doomy kind of projects that I'd talked to. I think, Sulaco was one that I approached quite early, which is looking like to be a massive hit, based on an old game called Fear, which is probably my favorite FPS. Okay. So there already some of these other kind of games that I've been talking to, and then there was a Unity-based, just a different engine, one called Unleash Hell, who I made tentative overtures to, and he was the dev there for me. He, you know, would start a dialogue, went kind of committed, and but yeah, that was all fine. And then there was, I think, another one called Sandsire, which was a UE4 based, so a different engine to get. And so I'd started talking to people who were making games, but nothing super concrete, and I wasn't driving much. But then, you know, I get this opportunity, and I was like, well, here's something I can market. Here's a lever. Look what I can do for you. I can get you an inside, you know, run into Realms Deep in a higher profile through the studio. And that was just a massive catalyst. It's actually kind of scary how quickly things have changed.
Yeah, and you were sitting on that for weeks, because I know you're like, oh, something big is brewing. And I'm like, yep. You bastard, tell me. You're like, I can't.
No, and so Realms Deep was only recently publicly announced. I think it was a couple of weeks ago now. In terms of, I think everyone kind of knew it was happening, but in terms of the date and promo materials and whatnot, the official announcement, and we've been told, keep quiet until Fred, 3D Realms owner, has said this thing's public. We were good children.
That's good. Yeah. No, because I was just wondering then, obviously, you're going to be wrapping up Age of Hell, and that's going to be the primary focus. In terms of the next games, like, just for yourself personally and for your whole vision of Hellforge, is it going to be always sort of doomy, or would you be like, all right, we're actually going to go into Unreal Engine 4 or 5, whatever the hell they're on now? Or do you think you'll kind of keep it, as the kids like to say, boomer shooter realm? Or where did you see yourself carving out your niche?
Yeah, so it's an interesting kind of market out there at the moment, and because I've definitely thought about this. At the moment, it's definitely stick to your knitting, stick to what you know, and the majority of the games that are under the studio banner are actually GZ Doom based, because I can actually directly help with them in terms of technical knowledge. But we do have, like I said, we've got two UE4 games, definitely one Unity. So there is other engine expertise. There's another game that I'm talking to that's in the Construct 2 engine, which I'd never heard of before.
Okay.
We're definitely looking to not typecast too heavily whilst sticking to stuff I know better. I do want to get into other engines personally, like in terms of game development. So it makes sense to start talking to people who have that knowledge and that those expertise, and I can tap into that later. Long term, my dream game, I think, would be to make an ARPG, an isometric Diablo clone kind of thing. I think they'd be a lot of fun. It's a much bigger undertaking than an FPS game. There's a lot more to test, a lot of balancing, skills, items, player classes, and making sure it's all nicely balanced across the whole game. So that's like once things are successful, cool, this is going to be my baby. So, but yeah, at the moment, it's very much retro shooter FPS. And like I said, the market's quite interesting because there is a real glut of these games coming out. Like, we're talking a huge wave of products about to hit the market over the next couple of years. And, you could definitely raise concerns about oversaturation and it causing, the consumer to kind of go, it's just another boomer shooter.
Well, no one's ever said that about books, There's infinite amount of books and they keep getting published. So I disagree with that public sentiment.
No, I generally do too. I think there will get a point where there'll be a wave of average quality products, and I think we might be about to see that. But to be honest, a lot of the stuff that I see is very high quality and certainly a lot of potential. But more importantly, it's a lot of variety. While retro shooter is a particular style, and you can feel it in the DNA. Depending on what inspiration the game's drawn from, is it Doom, is it Duke Nukem 3D, is it Quake, is it something a little bit more modern like Fear, from the early 2000s or Halo or whatever, that changes how it plays in some pretty visceral ways. And like, there's a lot of variety in visual presentation, right down to like super pixelated, like almost 8-bit old school styles to much shinier, almost AAA. Or pretty much AAA level, like Turbo Overkill is a beautiful looking game and wouldn't look out of place in a Bethesda lineup kind of thing. Yeah. But it's still a boomer shooter in terms of its development. So there's a lot of variety, and I think it's a strong industry and will be for some time.
Well, of course, no, because you can definitely see I think we're entering like a new golden age of FPS at the moment, because I am quite familiar with a company, Creator VC, that have done documentaries. They've done like 80s action, 80s horror, 80s sci-fi is due to come out. I think they've smashed their goal on Kickstarter for the FPS documentary.
Ah, yes, I've heard about that one.
So they have managed, it's like a 30-year thing now that like FPS is 30 years old.
Mm.
So it's everyone who had kind of grown up, like yourself and myself and other people who would probably be listening to this. They are coming of age now where they can actually start developing their love for that and getting into the industry. It's like we are actually on the next generation precipice now, where there's a coming of age of the genre, I think.
Yeah, 100%.
To your point, like, there is a massive wave coming out. I think it's finally manifest itself. It's seeing it, and people are sort of becoming more aware. Like, if you even go on Steam, like, most of the stuff at the moment like is first person shooters. Like, it's only getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, and it's because like there was the point you raised about like generationally, people like in their 30s now who grew up playing these games is a point I've actually made exactly the same at that conversation with some people. Yeah, it's people like me who used to do this kind of stuff for fun, making maps, playing games, playing their friends' stuff. The tools are essentially free. There is a zero cost barrier to entry to make your own game at the moment. Yes, if you want to, you can, if you want high quality assets, well, you do have to pay for that, but there's you can certainly pick them up cheap enough to build a game and actually build a sellable game. You can go through that whole process. And because of that, you've got all these passion project kind of people finally be able to turn what they love doing into a career, or at least you know, a commercially viable product. So it's definitely a thing, I think, that is, there's quite a clear generational link there, which is really cool. And it, you know, there are still, you know, you still get the youngins coming in and going, oh, I can make a game now, which is also great. Like, they have a different perspective and influence, and they didn't necessarily grow up with these old shooters, and didn't watch them, hit stores and take the world by storm. They were still influenced by them, and they've come to them later through bigger titles like your Doom Eternal. When that got released, in Doom 2016 in particular, that drew a lot of people back to classic Doom.
Yeah,
and that kind of cyclical feeding back into the old communities, I think, is really cool.
Myself included, I have a pretty unorthodox, I suppose, in the traditional sense of my history with Doom. My first port of Doom was for the GBA, Game Boy Advance. And then I loved it. I thought it was amazing, even though I know by many purist standards it's not a great port. And then got it on the Xbox Live Arcade, I think, in maybe 2006 or 5 or very early on. That was one of the first games released. And pretty much dormant until Doom 2016. And that came with Doom 1 and 2. And I got back into that. Mm-hmm. Then Doom 64, which I played God mode, all weapons, last level on the Nintendo 64. Too afraid to play the rest of the game. Parked that until it came back on Switch. Played that on Switch. Reconnected with an old friend over that who I hadn't spoken to in like 6-7 years.
Oh, nice.
Went and interviewed Night Dive Studios, who did the remake, Stephen Kick there. I was like getting all involved. And, awesome. I'm getting deeper and deeper into the community. You know, even Romero Games community and everything. That's why we're chatting today. We're both on the moderation team. Full disclosure.
It's interesting, those little links. And you mentioned Doom 16 shipping with Doom 1 and 2. You know, Doom Eternal shipped with Doom, the new Doom 64 port. And that's the first time I played Doom 64. So that's very smart marketing, I think, from ID. That cost them nothing, really, to be honest. To bundle up those old games with the new ones and just keep people involved in the IP. As great as something like Doom 16 or Doom Eternal is, the amount of like new content is limited. Doom 2016 had Snapback, but that was a pretty good program for what it did. And the more complex an engine is, the more powerful it is, the harder it is to generate a modding community because there's like IP issues and creative control issues around the technology, which perfectly makes sense, but also just even if it was completely open source, just figuring out how to make maps for something in id Tech 6 or id Tech 7, which the engines for Doom 16 and Doom Eternal, just talking spending years just to figure out how to build a room kind of thing. Whereas classic Doom and Quake is the same, Duke Nukem 3D to a degree. You can make a map in an afternoon. Even if you've never done it before, you can sit down, open up Doom Builder, and make a playable space instantly almost. That means that there is just a far greater volume of new content to play. And no matter how good your game is, people will stop playing it if there's nothing new for it.
Yeah, definitely. I have a few lingering achievements on Doom 2016. I'm like, is there anyone playing multiplayer? Is SnapMap gone offline? Like, I don't know. Because they pull servers for new games like that. Crazy.
Well, it's money. Like, it costs.
Yeah, of course.
If it's not profitable, they're going to drop it. Which is again, I'm not going to hold that against a commercial company.
No, absolutely not. Like, it
makes perfect sense.
It's just on a little off tangent, like for games preservation in the future, like a lot of games, half the game is sort of online or tied to online. I think like 343 Industries, who are the bastions of the Halo franchise at the moment, they're sunsetting all the servers for classic Halo in, I think, September, October, sometime in the very near future. And they have a checklist of what features will remain or be gone. And for Halo Reach, there was a customization tool for like your armor, helmets, blah, blah, blah. Strangely, that's one of the things that was tied to online feature. So now you can't customize your character anymore. And you're just like, what? So
like,
you,
what? Why?
Yeah, you never know kind of what is tied to the online. Like, who even knows if there's games that... was there a famous one like Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 5 or 6 that only like the menu was on the disc or the first level. And the day one patch was like 60 gigabytes or something. It was, you know, the full game. So if you actually bought the disc now, you can't play the game because the server's gone. So,
yeah, like, because that's a frustration for me, particularly because I'm a largely single player gamer. I do like my co-op and multiplayer and deathmatch and whatnot, but that's not my focus.
I'd be the same.
Yeah. One of my favorite games, probably the game I got the most hours in, is Path of Exile, which is a New Zealand made ARPG, Diablo clone, but probably the best of the genre made to date. You know, Diablo 2, I'd say, you know, for its time especially, that was fantastic and stood, you know, head and shoulders above the rest. Path of Exile is that good, but it's all online. It's very much a you know, client server driven interaction. You can't play offline. If your internet's down, you can't play it, which is frustrating. If you live somewhere where your internet's spotty or you don't have a good connection, and then, you know, just even on single player, you get lag spikes that kill you. And they've done a lot of work to improve that. You know, they're probably one of the hardest working dev teams in the world, as for Path of Exile. Shout out to New Zealand, because it made just down the road from me.
Shout out to our neighbours, New Zealand.
No, credit, and they've done, yeah, because they built their engine from scratch as well. And there were huge issues in terms of performance that they had to work through for years and open and closed beta rounds, and you know, listen to people complain as they do, and just, but you know, it is a very good game, and they've done a lot of work to improve all that kind of stuff, but it's still an online-based game. And like you say, there's problems there. If for whatever reason, if the company goes out of business and they shut servers down, you won't be able to play it unless they release a single-player version, which would be nice. Talking about, you know, that wave of retro FPS, they're all primarily single-player focused.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it's expensive to make multiplayer games. I know New Blood's trying one with an unfortunate spaceman, and apparently it's, like, while it is a very good game, it is a whole host of extra headaches and costs in particular to keep the multiplayer side of that running. And if someone like New Blood, for those who don't know, it's probably the biggest of the indie dev game companies at the moment, publisher and develop in-house stuff as well, immensely successful. And actually the model that I'm basing Hellforge Studios on, if they struggle with it, you know it's hard.
Yeah, 100%, yeah. But I want to turn our attention back to Age of Hell. So we said it's a thing, but as this is an audio-only podcast and you can't show me a slideshow or anything, expand on the elevator pitch. Paint us a picture of Age of Hell. What's it actually going to entail? What's the vision? And what's the aesthetic?
If you go back to the roots of where it came from, you know, classic Doom mapping, one of the more common, particularly for new mappers, for first maps, is the good old tech base map, space station-y kind of stuff. And, you know, Doom's textures are very much revolve around that in a big way, and a lot of the classic tech bases is still very much a thing. And but I've always been interested in slightly more abstract design and hellish iconography and that kind of stuff. I've always found that more interesting from a visual perspective. So my designs have always been very abstract. I don't try and make real world spaces. I mean, like I did base a map around a building I built, but in terms of what was inside it, it was, didn't make any sense.
Demons, like, and not old people.
Yeah, exactly. It didn't feel like usable spaces. And so that has always been my favorite kind of thing to make was hell maps, you know, fire and brimstone and monolithic spires and big arcane structures that loom over the player. So I thought, well, why not make a full map set of that kind of stuff? And I just got, you know, that was just the genesis of it. So Age of Hell, the game, wears that on its sleeve. It is 6 episodes, each with a different theme, which is partly done to be able to release it segmentally, otherwise you'll be waiting a decade. But also to mix up, because playing 30 Fire and Brimstone maps does get a bit boring after a while, if it just looks all the same. No matter how much you vary up your combat and stuff, it's like, yeah, we need to change the scenery.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's 6 distinct themes to work with, and they steadily get more and more hellish as you go through. But it very much, very abstract designs, big maps, and very intense combat as well. So I think, yeah, it goes from like an icy brutalism set to kind of gothic marble crypts, and then episode 3 is, yeah, very much your red hell black and red colours featuring heavily and getting a bit more fleshy and nasty, and then into a tech hell. So kind of inspiration for that's Event Horizon.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of my favourite movies.
It is actually one of my faves too, growing up. It's scared the shit out of me. It made it even better.
Yeah, so and maybe touches of Quake, you know, Strog, you know, body horror kind of stuff.
Yeah, all the good stuff.
So, yeah, all that good gooey stuff. Episode 5, we're going to be drawing upon like Lovecraft and Geiger. So I call it the Void Hell. So very warped non-Euclidean structures really turn the player's brain into a pretzel. And then episode 6 will be like your full-blown Doom Eternal classic styled hell with you know, huge demonic structures and I haven't actually, you know, there's huge chunks of work, you know, episodes that I haven't actually made anything for you. I'm very much looking forward to experimenting with those different visual tropes. But, you know, it wears its Doom roots on its sleeve. You know, a lot of the monsters, while they have all been recreated from scratch, shout out to the Mr. Cat, who's my co-leading dev, for working tirelessly at that kind of stuff. So you can see those, we call it the Bone Reaver. It looks quite like a Revenant. Cacovore looks like the Cacodemon, but it's a retake on it.
Yeah.
So you see that kind of stuff in there, but then there's also a whole host of new stuff as well. Episode specific enemies, bosses, and proper boss encounters, which is something that classic Doom doesn't do very well because they're hard to code. They're probably one of the hardest assets to make as a genuine boss encounter in the original Doom. You know, the old, good old cyber demon that terrified people, you know, back when they played Doom 1, that's a walkover these days. Like, people put 20 of them in a single fight.
It's gotten very trivial.
Yeah. So trying to bring back, you know, bosses are scary and intense, like almost Dark Souls-esque kind of fights, you know, mano a mano challenges. And that's been a lot of fun. So we've coded a few of those together and set up the arenas and tested some fights, and it's like, this is cool. This is really, really cool.
Super.
And then the other thing is we've just folded in some kind of modern design concepts like alt fires on weapons, a dash mechanic and that kind of stuff. So I do feel like it's got something for people who like a bit more of a modern FPS, but also the fans of the retro stuff.
Yeah, great. In terms of the release schedule then, I know you said it's probably going to be a couple of years to finish everything. Are you going to be releasing it definitely like episodically? Will you try and do like an episode a year? Or when can we get the first sort of finished product package? When can we expect that?
Well, the demo is going to be out next month.
Ooh.
This has been announced, so it's not quite a scoop for you. But I know the demo is going to come out at Realms Deep August 14th.
I actually have a scoop for you when you finish your question, your answer, I mean.
This is very exciting and slightly nerve-wracking as Age of Hell will be going to the wider public for the first time. Like, it's been tested heavily internally, and Patreon supporters have gotten copies, and so I've gotten some feedback from people who've never played it before, and it's been good. So I'm feeling confident that we've made something that is fun, but it's going to be the first kind of like, hey everybody, tell me what you think. So that's the demo this year, August 14th. That's locked in. We've got a build that works. We're just tweaking it. It could be shipped like that now. So that is 100% going to happen. And then my current plan, and we'll see how this goes, but I want to release Age of Hell, I'm going to call them volumes, and each volume will be two episodes. So, and probably 2 years between. So if we can get our shit together, first one out next year, probably late next year, and then 2 years for the next one, 2 years for the next one. So yeah, realistically, it is going to be 4 or 5 years to get the full 6 episodes, particularly with things like Hellforge Studios taking off. I might get dragged into making another game, but the pre-GZ Doom version of Age of Hell will definitely be finished at some point. You know, there's a lot of people have committed to it. It'd be bad for me to not follow through on that. And so it might end up becoming a bit more of a personal side thing whilst I work on commercial things, but I always want to be making Doom maps, and this has got that DNA in it.
Yeah, unreal. So I have some news for you, Anthony. I'm going to call you by your real name, like your mother when you're been a bold boy. So I am pleased to announce here to you as the Age of Hell lead, but someone we both know, a lot of people know, said that they will play this game, Age of Hell, and they're also going to voice chat with you while they play to give a review from a developer perspective. Can you have a guess who that person might be, Anthony?
I think I can. I could try and beat around the bush, but is it one John Romero?
It is John Romero. John Romero has said he's going to review your game and
okay, that's fucking awesome.
Talk through with that. So the Icon of Sin himself, the granddaddy of Doom, for any of those wondering, he was one of the founding members of id Software. So for him to be coming around and playing Age of Hell, I'm quite excited for you for that. So.
That's amazing. That I was not expecting that, to be honest. I do try not to guess when someone says, "I've got a surprise for you." It's like I try to put my brain, because I like being surprised by stuff. So I'd give a little. What could it be?
You didn't want to be too presumptuous on that one, I'd say.
No. That's fucking amazing. Because I had got the chance to talk to Mr. Romero on my podcast, and he's an awesome dude. So. That's amazing.
And go listen to that episode, guys, if you're wondering. It was great.
It was so much fun.
Yeah, it was really good. So that's my scoop for you. It's a counter scoop.
That is quite the scoop.
So can you give me anything back, like a little back and forth?
It's like time to pay the piper.
Yeah, maybe like a demo of Age of Hell.
Well, that one I probably could do.
Yeah, you probably could do that.
That one is in my power. Actually, that I will do. I think that's a fair trade. And we're just about to push out a new build, hopefully this weekend. So once we've got that sharpened up and make sure there's no new bugs. That's always the big headache, is you fix some stuff and you improve some things and then you introduce a new bug that breaks stuff. So once we've made sure that there's no catastrophes hiding in the demo, I will do that.
Yeah, no, it's quite funny because I wanted to play some of your work beforehand, and a few weeks ago I asked you what would be the best one, just to see, and you're like, Bastion of Chaos, you should definitely download that. So I was like, okay, yeah, I never had GZ Doom before, just downloaded it, and I was like, oh look, it's a 93-year-old game, how labor intensive could this be? And it turned into just a gothic slideshow. I think it was like 2 frames per second. I was like, this looks lovely, I'm sure it plays really well, I think I'm going to park it.
yeah. No, it's and that's definitely something I'm known for, is making maps in like I said, a 20-year-old engine that can bring modern machines to their knees. And I'll be lying if I didn't enjoy that. But there is for people who are worried about that, there is a low spec version of Bastion of Chaos that does actually run on fairly low end machines. You still need something that supports OpenGL and that kind of stuff. And I will. It's definitely a thought I've had for Age of Hell. So Age of Hell is similarly going to be pretty taxing, but one will be putting features in there to like give the player things they can adjust to help it perform better. But also, like, there's a high chance that I'll do like a separate release where I go through every map and remove like a whole lot of lighting and block off sight lines and that kind of stuff. So people who do have weaker machines or older computers can still play it.
Yeah, but the funny thing is, people can't see now, but we're recording. You see how big your preview is for your camera? That's how much I had to shrink down Bastion of Chaos, and it was still crawling my laptop. It was poach's stamp size. Is crazy.
Time for a new rig.
Yeah, no, definitely. It nearly went on fire yesterday, guys. I was chatting with John Romero for a community deathmatch event, and I was tasked with recording the audio for the Ask Me Anything section, and the laptop just crashed, and the only thing that was recovered was my mic recording, which is useless. So that's pretty much unusable. But is there anything else we've missed, or anything else we'd like to chat about?
I don't think there's, in terms of like my history and whatnot, is it's been pretty comprehensive. I think we said it before, but we're definitely in a golden age of retro shooters. So go out there and find stuff. Like, there's free demos out there. There's stuff you can get pretty cheap through like Kickstarter. Go find some games. And Twitter's a great place to trawl. Steam, play them, because even a finished product's still $20. Like, they're not. It doesn't cost you much to to find these things. And I think that's one of the strengths is people go, I'll give that a shot and go and pick it up on, and, you know, 20 minutes later, they've downloaded it and are playing it. And, you know, if you enjoy one out of every two or three, that's a pretty good hit rate. And to be honest, most of them are very high quality.
Yeah, absolutely. And one last question. So before we wrap up, because I know you have places to be, where did the name Bridge Burner come from?
Oh, that is an interesting one. Not many people actually ask that one, which is interesting, because I would have thought I'd have a few more queries around that. So there's I'm a pretty avid reader, particularly of sci-fi and fantasy, and my favorite series is by a writer called Stephen Erickson. The series is called The Malazan Book of the Fallen, massive 10-part, you know, 10-book epic dark fantasy, which I'm actually currently going through rereading at the moment. Yeah, it's an amazing series if you like things that are pretty bleak. There's a company, an elite company in that book called the Bridgeburners. They feature really heavily through the storyline and lots of cool characters in there. And it's funny because my first foray into Discord was my friend started up a little D&D server. So I'm definitely a nerd. So I was like, let's call myself Bridgeburner because that's kind of cool. My D&D character was named after a character from those books. So I was like, I'll just call my user, you know, profile Bridgeburner, because I just think it's cool. And I'd done things like for my Diablo 3 characters, I'd named after characters from the book. So this is something that I've done, you know, for games, you know, for a while. And little did I realize that me just kind of haphazardly picking as my online moniker, that all of a sudden it's a brand, you know.
Building an industry. You never know what's going to stick, really. You have to be careful.
Yeah, I think it's a good one. It's pretty distinctive, and here we are. No regrets.
Yeah, no, because I'm always interested in names, because the name of this podcast, The Bizarre Cast, ties back to a previous alias called The Fear Merchant. It was like The Fear Merchant's Bizarre, and then The Fear Merchant came from the Resident Evil 4 Merchant. Mm. We were streaming that like 10 years ago, and you know, it's like it's all kind of sequential and layered, and now all people see is Richard the Bizarre Cast. And like, what a stupid name! And you're like,
yeah,
you know. So it's just funny.
That is interesting. Those kind of links and, you know, those decisions that you make can end up, you know, not necessarily changing your life, but definitely having an impact on you know, how you present yourself to the world. You know, shout out to the people who call themselves like Ultimate Gamer 42069 Lameo.
I know, yeah.
bad marketing call.
XX on the side, you know.
Always a warning sign. Like, as you know, we both moderate, Ramirez and I moderate a lot of servers. As soon as you see someone like that, you're like, I'm keeping an eye on you.
Yeah, add note. Watch out.
Yeah, note. Troublemaker.
So in terms then of putting yourself out there in the world, where can people find you online and where can they find your projects?
So you can find me on Twitter at Bridgeburner4, and I've started up some professional accounts for Age of Hell. So there's at Age of Hell Game and at Hellforge Studio. So that's all Twitter. I've got a YouTube account, Bridgeburner, where I post tutorials. I'm on Twitch as Bridgeburner56, and then you can find me on Discord, and there's links to that on my bio on Twitter. It's probably the easiest way to go through there. But I'm Bridgeburner0056 on Discord as well.
Awesome stuff. Well, Bridge, Anthony, Bridgeburner, we'll go with Bridge. Bridge, thank you very much for taking time out of your day today. All those links will be in the show notes, so you didn't have to write them down a pen and paper there, guys. And for me, you can always find me at the usuals, at the Bizarrecast, and any comments. You can actually now send me voice mail in Anchor. So anchor.fm/TheBizarreCast to subscribe if you're new listening and a fan of Bridgeburner coming over, crossing streams. So guys, until next time, that has been Richard for The Bizarrecast, and I'll see you in the next episode.
End of line.